Does everyone like basketball?
Welcome to the B-Side, podcast number one of Tawasin Alliance Church. My name is Rhoda Brooks, and I will be your host for this episode. And with me today is Pastor Steve Croker.
Hey, Rhoda.
Hi, Steve. And I guess our special guest today is Shirley.
Hello. Sonnton.
Welcome.
Thank you.
She's very nervous.
Yes.
Yeah, we've asked her to chime in, and we'll see what happens there. So, if you have special questions for our special guest, you can also email them to us. I'm sure she'd be thrilled.
Thank you, Rhoda.
You're welcome. Anyway, so B-side podcast. Steve, why a podcast?
Thought it'd be fun to do another resource for our church, way we can discuss issues, deal with the text, help answer questions. I was actually meeting with a friend, Jeff Bucknam from Northview Community Church, and he told me about the podcast their church did, and I started listening to it and listened to it all summer and thought it was awesome. Just really cool how they answer questions from their church, and they discuss theological issues, they discuss what's going on, culture, all sorts of things. And so we are totally ripping off their idea of starting a weekly podcast like this, and so we have to give much thanks to the guys at Northview Community Church, Abbotsford. Because we love their podcast, and so we wanted to do something similar for our church. And so the idea would be once a week we're getting together, different people, some of us, maybe others join us, and talk about questions that you can send in, talk about the text, the message, a little more content, a little more casual environment, talk about things going on in the church, ministry stuff, pop culture stuff, stuff that's in the news, and think through all those things theologically, think through the lens of the gospel. So we're hoping it'll be a good ministry tool, a lot of fun.
This is like coffee talk. It's kind of like people like walking in the office and entering into like a coffee talk conversation that we're having on things. How did something go? Or thoughts on your message? Or we just saw something in the news and we're all talking about where do we think things stand with that? And sometimes it's just a bit of a gong show, but that is how you can get to know us better, I guess. Yes. So maybe it'll be informative and slightly entertaining, hopefully. Anyway, so it could be used to follow up your message.
Yep.
So if people have questions regarding your message, they can email those in. What if they have questions that have nothing to do with your message?
Yeah, I mean, anything we wanted to, it's sort of like more content from Sunday. So if there's follow-up ideas, things that didn't make it into the message, things we want to unpack further, discuss, apply, sort of like some of the community group questions where we might be hitting around ideas from how do we work this out in our own environment. If you have questions about the text, email them in, as well as just other things, other theology things that you've been wrestling with, want to talk about, want us to wrestle with, whether it's, whatever it may be, just send it in and we'll try and take it on and
it might be great
to discuss it, yeah.
Because there's a lot of new community groups starting, and sometimes that takes trust to build up. So if people are really wrestling with something and they're hopefully able to discuss it in their community groups, but if they're not, then they'd be able to email the question in to us. And although it's not anonymous to us, we don't share who the questions are from on the podcast.
Yeah, we won't share your name.
Yeah.
So if you ask a goofy question, you won't be exposed. There's no goofy question. Well, there are goofy questions.
Yeah, but most of those come from me, so
yeah.
That'll be okay.
So you'll cover the goofy ones?
And exactly. And then everything else will seem tame. So, so where people can send their questions in is going to be B-side, that's in the letter B, in the word side, B-side, altogether, lowercase, at tawasinalliance.org. And we'll repeat that at the end of the podcast for you. And in addition to hearing Steve's thoughts on things all the time and his feedback, we're also hoping to bring in special guests. So maybe some of our visiting missionaries or ministry leaders, things like that.
Basically anyone who's unemployed that can stop by on Monday afternoons.
Or has a schedule that
you're free on Monday afternoons.
Yeah.
We'll swing by and we'll broadcast your thoughts on the internet.
And there you go. Like
so,
I said.
Unemployed people.
Or just people who work night shifts.
Yeah.
Maybe their thoughts on the way to work. Who knows? And also hopefully again, it'll get you a chance to even just hear from us on topics that aren't always so formal. And, when is the podcast going to come out? Like when can people actually listen?
Normally we'll record Mondays. and unless it's like a holiday or something like that. And so we should have it out Monday night on the website, Monday afternoon, maybe Tuesday morning, something like that. So early on in the week, we throw it up on the website. We're going to try and get it on an actual podcast feed. If you have iTunes, that might take a little bit of time to authenticate and all that. But definitely it'll be on the website, and hopefully we'll get it on the app, TAC app, soon as well. So look for it basically Monday night, Tuesday morning, and do it once a week. New content every week.
That's great, because I didn't even know what you meant by authenticate. So as long as I know, I can look for it Monday or Tuesday morning. Awesome.
iTunes doesn't let you just...
All you tech people knew what he was talking about, so that was good. Okay, so talking about getting reports and updates also on maybe things that have happened. We just had a great, beautiful fall weekend, and both of you happened to be involved in something this past weekend. Shirley, part of your team, were on very, very tall bikes.
This is true.
So maybe I'll come at you next and say, what were you a part of this past weekend?
Along with a number of others from our church, we did Ride for Refuge, and we were riding for Ratnak International, just raising money and awareness for their work in Cambodia. So we had, I think there were 13 riders on our team, including the three tall bikes.
Very fun. And they were doing a variety. Some people were doing shorter routes than others, right?
Yes, we had a couple of families, including Steve and his family, doing the 10K, and then the rest of us did a 50K bike ride.
Right on.
So what is a tall bike? Everyone asks, what?
We're going to have to somewhere we can post pictures to go along with this podcast.
quite literally, it is one bicycle frame welded on top of another, which places the seat somewhere around the top of my head at 5'3".
You're 5'3"?
If I'm on a good day.
Okay, so Steve, do you want to elaborate a little bit more on this Ride for Refuge? Like, Shirley said that it was your teams in particular were raising funds for Ratnak International, so maybe you want to give a brief explanation of who they are.
Yeah. So, like, Ride for Refuge is an event that happens all over Canada, different cities. I think in the States too, and then they raise money for all kinds of organizations. So you can send your team and choose which organization you want to race for. So while different people are racing for different things, our team was all racing for Ratnak. All three of us were in Cambodia and got to see the work of Ratnak firsthand last summer. And many people in our church know Brian McConaughey, know the ministry of Ratnak. But for those who don't, I mean, they focus on child exploitation and those rescuing and rehabilitating those who have suffered from sex trafficking. And so it's, when we saw firsthand what they did, and it's extremely important work. And just to see the gospel transform the lives of those children, mostly girls, boys too, who had been through hell and were now living a life of joy, and just to see that transformation was amazing. And so it was something that both Melissa and I, and I'm sure both of you as well, have been passionate about advancing and helping them do their amazing work. I remember, like, one of the things that really stood up to me when we were there was going to the bakery, where these girls who had been through so much and had had their lives just devastated and ruined, here they were not only working in this bake shop, but they were, like, it was this fancy bakery where they were making, like, cupcakes, cakes. Yeah, like, phenomenal. So it was just this amazing metaphor of not just that these girls' lives have been put back together, restored by the gospel, love, community, counseling, care, and we're now able to hold down a job and relate in a normal way to adults, particularly foreigners, adult men, which is really impressive being considering the trauma they've been through. But then the metaphor of them not just holding down a job, but creating beautiful things, which I found profound. And so just amazing work. That's just one of the programs that they partner in. We've been trying to, our family has committed ourselves to raising money and helping out Ratnak. One of the cool things is, 3 years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, my family all chipped together, bought me a new bike. So I had a new bike. I hadn't had a bike for a couple years since we moved back from Manitoba. And Melissa didn't have a bike. And I was looking for a bike seat for the back of my bike. And I was on Craigslist. And we found one in Tawasin. I went to the house and they wanted $25 for this bike seat. And I show up. Yeah, it's good. Use bike seat. And I didn't have any tools. And it was on the back of a bike still. And
they hadn't taken it off.
They hadn't taken it off. So they showed me bike seat on the bike. And I was like, yeah, I'll take the bike seat. $25. Here's the money. And I forgot. I mean, do you happen to have a screwdriver? Because it took 4 screws to get this thing off. And she didn't have one. And she's like, well, if you want, you can just have the whole bike. And so
for the $25?
For free, yeah. So I bought a bike seat. Came with bike.
Came with a free bike.
And that became Melissa's bike. So for like the last 3 years, she's been riding this bike that we got free thrown in with the car seat. Or with the child seat on the back. So this bike was free with the $25 purchase of the seat on the back. And she herself raised $750 this year and like five something last year. So she's probably raised like $1,300 for Ratneck in 2 years on a bike that she got for free. We actually were joking we should sell the car seat or the bike seat for $35 on Craigslist, and then it will, the bike would have been a $10 profit. We paid to take this bike. So no, it was a lot of fun. Last year it was raining really hard and it was nasty and muddy and
it
awful.
But it was one of those things last year where, especially on the 50K ride, it was probably the most miserable day of my life. And all Ian and I could think of and talk about was these kids in Cambodia. And they've been through so much worse than we were going through that day. And so we just kept riding.
Yeah. I think if you've heard Brian share, you can't be unchanged. And then we had the additional of actually being in one of the brothel districts with him and meeting children. And I often say, people say, like, how was it? And I say, I was totally broken and I was totally blessed. Because the Lord showed, he just gave a bigger picture for things. And there was horrible darkness, but you also saw the amazing things he was doing in that community and the way he was redeeming things. And so it feels like such a small way to be a part of things, of what God's already doing. So that is very cool. How much did they raise overall, do you know, for Ratneck?
I think $3,300. We raised, our team raised like $3,300 total. Yeah. I think Ratneck, in all the locations across Canada, their goal is $100,000. It's actually amazing because I think 10 days to go, they'd raised $40,000. They raised $100,000 last year, so they set that as their goal. And I was like, they're not going to make it. They're going to be like disappointingly short. I mean, still $40,000-$50,000 is great, but they ended up raising $115,000, and they did like 70 of that in the last week.
That's awesome.
So they reached their goal and exceeded it, which is exciting, and is for others to be part of it.
Well, much to be thankful for. And speaking of Thanksgiving, that is probably the next upcoming event.
Yeah. This weekend.
Thanksgiving, coming up this weekend. So do you guys, either of you, have any traditions that you love about Thanksgiving or favorite foods?
Turkey and cranberries. Cranberries with a little bit of turkey.
Really? Cranberries are like my least favorite part of turkey dinner.
No, I got excited even on the ride for refuge when we passed by all the cranberry fields and I was like, it's coming.
Hilarious. I've never do you like cinnamon in your cranberries?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
You're like a purist.
Yes.
She's a purist and a food separatist. I learned this today. So like when I eat my Christmas dinner, my Thanksgiving dinner, I like all the different flavors and I often like to mix them in one bite. So my one bite has to have like several things on it. And you don't even like your food detached, do you?
It's true. It's people like you at the dinner table that horrify me.
I'm not even like talking with my mouth full or like chewing it. It's just the way I eat.
I need like little buffer zones for like when a sauce starts to like spill over into your salad or something. It's like that becomes the unedible part of the meal.
And I look at that and I just feel so sad for you because I feel like you're missing out and
I get to enjoy each flavor independently and it's a beautiful thing.
And I bet you eat them in a certain order. Bite of this and a bite of that.
No, I try and place the food on my plate so that I can eat clockwise.
I feel so vulnerable on Sunday now.
I can really see the progress that I'm making through dinner.
I bet you I make progress a lot faster than you.
I know we'll have a competition one of these days. You can eat their turkey dinner
faster. It was a matter of how fast to get the food done. Anyway, we digress very quickly here. And now you'll know what it'd be like if either Shirley and I had Thanksgiving dinner at your house. Steve, what's your favorite Thanksgiving food?
Things under gravy.
Gravy.
Well, we had our tradition in our family. We had to eat whatever was set before us at every meal. I mean, just manners, and that's the way it was raised. But on Christmas Day and on Thanksgiving, we had turkey feast. And my mom would make all kinds of things. There'd be veggies. There'd be all sorts of stuff. But it was the one day my mom was like, this is a celebration. We're thankful. You get to eat whatever you want. If you don't like it, you can't be rude about it, but you get to eat whatever you want. So I would just eat potatoes with lots and lots of gravy on them. Stuffing, my mom's stuffing, which is amazing, under lots and lots of gravy. And then turkey, dark meat, under lots and lots of gravy. And then pie, lots
under of lots of gravy.
No, under lots of whipped cream. Pumpkin pie, my mom's famous pumpkin pie. She made me pie for my birthday, and that was the best present.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Now, does Melissa make things for Thanksgiving dinner, and you don't eat them?
No, we think it's a cool tradition. We carry it on. We tell our kids like they can eat whatever they want for Thanksgiving. Like they have to eat their supper normally, but for Thanksgiving, for Christmas, it's sort of, we view it as like a celebration. Like most meals are meals, but these are celebration feasts. And I mean, even like biblically, there's a time for fasting and a time for feasting. And we gather in this case to celebrate something and to feast together. And there's this theology of feasting. We want to feast and celebrate, so it should be a happy, joyful feasting. And so I think my mom, like I think Christmas last year, my mom made hot dogs because the kids aren't really thrilled about turkey, and she was determined as well. It has to be happy. It has to be, you know, it's meant to be the best meal of the year because we're celebrating the best thing, namely the coming of Christ, or Thanksgiving, all God's blessings in our lives. And so we just want it to be that for everyone, to be like a big celebration.
Hmm. Well, my favorite is curried corn. We have this curry, it's like this sour cream with onions and curried corn. It's like the best corn you've ever had.
You guys, you picked a vegetable.
I did, and it's like weird, right? But
it's the true day you slaughter, like how you feast, you're supposed to slaughter an awesome tasting animal and eat it.
I like that.
The animal
really
that is
like
so expensive. Kill the fattened calf, and you're like killing the fattened vegetable. And she wants, is cranberry a fruit? Yeah, it's a berry.
It is a fruit, but it sounds to me like you've really picked the gravy.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than the
made meat. From meat.
Yeah, I don't need the gravy.
Yeah, cranberry gravy. Anyway, well, we should get to the questions of a message here. But before we do that, one more quick thing. Steve, I always find, is full of amazing history, church history trivia. Oh, so, Steve, give me one random trivia fact.
Yeah, yesterday, well, depends when you listen to this, but Sunday, October 6th, was the day in 1536 William Tyndale was burned at the stake as a heretic. William Tyndale is most famous for, he was the guy who translated the Bible into English for the first time before, like, almost a century before the King James Version. He worked and labored to have the Bible in the vernacular of the people, that people should be able to read the Bible in their own language. Just as Luther was the first to translate the New Testament into German, into the language of the people, over in England, it was William Tyndale who brought the New Testament into the English, the scriptures into the English language. So, I mean, if you read on Sunday, if you read the Bible in English and not Hebrew and Greek, largely, we have to thank what God did through William Tyndale, and he actually gave his life for that and was burned as a heretic for doing that. So, faithful servant of God and someone worth remembering.
Wow. Okay. On that note.
Segue that, Rhoda.
Segue that. Happy Thanksgiving thought. But we are thankful for William Tyndale. So we're in the series of Nehemiah right now.
Yeah.
And here's a basic question to start, since it's our first podcast. But why are we doing Nehemiah? What was the thought process behind doing Nehemiah?
Yeah, it's something we talked about as elders. I think we talked about it as staff a bit.
Yeah,
yes,
we did.
I think we did. We talked about staff, talked about elders in the spring. And part of it was we were committed to preaching through books of the Bible. We walked through sections of scripture, chapter, section at a time. And we've spent a lot more time in the New Testament than the Old Testament recently, which is why we wanted to spend more time in the Old Testament to give a balanced diet from the scriptures. So we spent the summer in the Psalms. And then in the fall, we wanted to do a series throughout the fall that would be Old Testament. So that was part of it, is that. But then we were thinking through themes. And, I think what really motivated me is we see these twin themes in Nehemiah of this prayer first attitude of Nehemiah. He spends you know, at every turn, at every crisis, he turns and prays from the very outset of the book, which, you know, sets that tone all the way through. And then, but also partnered with that is this bold risk-taking. He faces opposition. He does hard things. He risks his life. He in obedience to God's call, he does things which are very difficult. And so I saw those themes of prayer and risk-taking. And I thought about my own life. I thought about our church and living in Tawasin and Ladner and growing up being the people of God in this place. And I thought, for a number of reasons, that those were things that we needed to do more of. We needed to be more prayerful. We needed to take bigger risks. I don't think we pray enough, personally, corporately. I don't think we take risk enough. I think we are far too safe. And so we talked about those things as being important, a prayerful risk-taking. And I just wanted us to walk through Nehemiah and see what God is calling us to do. And with anticipation going, like, it'll be fascinating to see what God calls us to do as we dwell on this and think through it for our own lives, individually and as a church. What are the risks and steps of obedience he's calling us to do and to prayerfully take? And so that was some of the motivation as we wanted to do that, to start the year off that way. And I've been really thankful for it. I think it's been well received. I've been impacted through my study of the texts and walking through it. And I think people have been blessed by it. And there's been really good response so far. So looking forward to carrying through.
Well, on that note about risk-taking, one of the things that's been hitting me in the series is at the same time that you've been doing the Nehemiah series, I'm co-leading a team that will be going back to Cambodia next summer. And we do a discipleship process. And so everybody on the team is partnered up with someone else, and we are given certain material to read through. And we've been reading Radical by David Platt. And one of the things that I should give the whole title of the book, it's Radical, Taking Your Faith Back from the American Dream. And one of the questions I think relates to this Nehemiah thing is obedience and risk-taking in our culture and today. Because I think sometimes we look at Old Testament and we think, oh, but that was back then, and that was in that culture. But I know in many cultures around the world, contemporary today, they have a very different concept of what obedience is than we do. And I've been feeling really challenged by that, because, yes, we live in a different place, and maybe we have different risks, but sometimes I think we take little to no risk, mm-hmm. or our obedience is really minimal because it's not pushed there. So I'm just was really interested in your thoughts on that, on like how would we challenge, like, I think for a lot of us, obedience is that I bring my family to church on Sundays, and therefore I'm an obedient Christian, and that's obedience to the word or a response back to the gospel. So I'm just curious to see how you fit that in with the text, or where you think it's pointing us to.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. We can't feel guilty for being born where we are. We didn't control that. We didn't choose to be born in Canada. So it's true that, you know, we just have a very different situation than other Christians in other parts of the world. Our brothers and sisters, I think of the 72 people, was it, that blew up in the bombing in the church in Pakistan, who they died because they worshiped Jesus.
Because they showed up to church.
They showed up to church to worship Jesus, and a bomb went off as a terrorist group was intentionally targeting the Christian church in that town. And then we gathered, and a bomb didn't go off. We were, in fact, given, you know, we don't get charged property tax, and we get, our government makes it easier for us to worship Jesus, and they died. Not that it was their government, but terrorist attack. And so the daily reality for Christians in many parts of the world is that they do face incredible risk, and they have to be wise about what they do and how they do it, but they do face, it's life and death. In many countries, it's illegal to convert from Islam to Christianity. Converting that way is illegal. It's interestingly not illegal to convert the other way. And so they do face significant risk just to follow Christ. But God has placed us here. We can't feel guilty about where we were born. But we are called to risk and to obey God when he calls us to go and to be obedient, even if there's cost to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I even think like there's some people, for them, risk may just simply be, I'm going to give to God, to the church, to his, to ministry, instead of hoarding all my money to myself, which is risky in that if you're giving hundreds or thousands of dollars away, you, that is less security from a worldly perspective. Those are things you could put in the savings account in case something bad happened. So that in itself is a kind of risk. To speak out, to be obedient, to represent Christ well, to be a person of integrity, to share Jesus with your neighbors, friends, family, is going to cost. It looks different than in Pakistan, but you know, it's still, there's always cost to following Christ.
So looking at the sword and the trowel, building and protecting.
Yeah, it's a cool image. I love, you know, we talked on Sunday about Spurgeon, and like he named his magazine or his newspaper magazine, I guess it was, The Sword and the Trowel, from Nehemiah 4, and this twin responsibility of building and protecting. We have to be, you know, we have to be protecting the things that God's called us to build, whether it's church ministry, whether it's our families, our marriages, our children, to protect, but also to build and to keep building. And when we're faced with opposition, when things come up against us, just to keep building and carry on, which is the lesson that they had to learn, the lesson that Nehemiah was leading them into, is just to carry on the project. It will be hard. I think a lot of people have this sense, it seems, that the Christian life is supposed to be easy. I'm not really sure where they get it. You know, I alluded to, is this a prosperity gospel thing where, you know, we wouldn't say that God wants us to be healthy and rich, but there seems to have been a little leakage, and some of that prosperity gospel has leaked in where we do feel like God owes us better, that he owes us blessing, and that if something hard comes, how could God possibly allow that to happen? And it seems, I mean, that's probably one of the most common questions I face. And as pastors, why would God let that happen? You know, there's someone's, you know, cancer diagnosis, lost job, a conflict in a relationship, badly treated, and there's these things which are definitely hard, and not to make light of them for a second, they are difficult and painful, betrayal, whatever it may be. But then the question of how could God ever let that happen? And I think we have a sense that the Christian life, we're owed better, and that it should be easy. That God is supposed to be working for our comfort and ease. And yet, to me, that just does not jive with the overall flow of the Old or New Testaments. The example of the apostles and the early church was that the church grew and the gospel went forth through persecution, through pain and difficulty. So I don't know where that comes from, but where people seem to think that it should be easy. And so you get to a passage like this, and we were observing that even if you're doing what God wants you to do, it may be hard. Like, I think the idea that people have is that if God calls you to it, it must be, it's going to go swimmingly. Everything's just going to go super well because you're in God's will, so it's going to be good. And yet, doing the right thing is often very difficult. It's hard.
When you look at people like even William Wilberforce, and if nobody knows who that is, or somebody doesn't know who that is, I'm sure there are many people who do know who that is. There's that video that came out just a couple years ago called Amazing Grace, which was really well done. But
or get the biography, which is better.
If you're a reader.
Eric Metaxas.
But if you're not going to read it, then at
his
least
biography
get
on William Wilberforce, which is awesome.
Yes, it is an amazing story. The British gentleman who was basically a main player in helping with the abolition of slavery in British colonies. But, I mean, you see his story, and it was plagued with opposition, and both health and peers and his friends and politically and things like that. And so it wasn't an easy go for him. But I think that So we talk about when you're going through times of discouragement and fatigue. A good question was, we want to challenge each other to run the race and not give up. But are there times to slow down and rest? And how do you know what are the times to take rest and what are the times not to give up?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the real key is that for Nehemiah, is he knew this is what God was calling him to do. There's no doubt in his mind, I believe. And we talked about in those first couple messages in the series, how do you know when God is calling you to do something and it's not just something you want to do? I mean, how do you discern if is this God's calling on your life? Because we don't take just foolish risk. We don't just take any old risk. It's not risk taking for the sake of showing off, but prayerful risk taking. In other words, when God calls and you know he's calling, you go for it, even if it looks hard. So how do we know if God's calling? And we talked about J.I. Packer pointed to four factors. He said, you know, it's the biblical factor we ask. Is this thing I feel called to, is it biblical and good? Is it fit with the teaching of Scripture? Is it right? Is God revealed that this is something I ought to do? Which should clarify whether this is truly his will or not. There's the Holy Spirit factor. You know, is the Spirit calling me to it? And you might have this sense of internal calling where you feel like there's just this angst in your heart that this is what God has called me to do, and a real sense that the Spirit is pulling in this direction. But that's not enough. Often people have this sort of desire in their heart, but on its own, that may not, Packer's saying, and I agree that that's not enough. Then the third factor is the body factor, the church. Are there people, fellow brothers and sisters in Christ, who know you, who know the situation, who affirm this? You've shared it with them. This is what I think God is calling me to. And they say, yes, I agree. I believe that God is calling you to that. And then the final is the opportunity factor. If there's no opportunity, God's simply not calling you to it. But as God opens up the opportunity and all of these factors line up, then you can be fairly confident that this is what God is calling you to. He's opened the door. He's, you know, have had godly and wise people in my church who know me well affirm that this is the step I need to take. I feel deep within me that this is what it is to do, and this thing is a good and biblical thing. So if you know that God is calling you to do it, then you do it. As opposition comes, especially if it's noticeably evil, if it's anti-biblical opposition, if it's just hurdles to cross that are not motivated by biblical things in particular, then you just keep going. You got to persevere because it's going to be hard, but God will see us through the difficulty. I think of the life of the Apostle Paul, who faced tremendous difficulty, opposition, but he didn't take those as a sign of quitting. He took it, you know, God is going to work mightily through his weakness and to carry on and to fulfill the calling. But he had a real keen sense of God's call. He knew what God's call in his life was, to preach the gospel, particularly amongst those who did not know the name of Christ. And so that's what he did, and he was going to do that no matter how difficult it came. So if we know that God is calling us, we move forward. We go on. We keep going. Now, there is times to slow down, to refresh and recharge. But that, too, is something that God calls us to. So we know that that is also biblical and true, to rest and to recover and to take seasons of recovery. Even these great people we talk about, Spurgeon spent a lot of time because of his poor health. He had to go down to the southern France where the weather was better and in the winters and recover and then come back to London. So, I mean, even the models of those people that are doing risk-taking, Wilberforce as well, had to take seasons of rest and recovery as well. But should we quit? If we know God's calling us to it, we carry on, which is what Nehemiah did. He wasn't going to let the army standing in his way because he knew God called him, so God's going to see them through it. But we have to discern. I mean, maybe there are situations where we need to just slow down and rest, that it's not the time right now to go full speed on this issue. I mean, it's hard to speak when we're just speaking generally here, but I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know I think there could be a difference on quitting because you're frustrated and discouraged, rather than, I know in my own life with my health, is God often, even if I'm not ready to take rest, like he creates times where I really don't have much of an option but to go and find rest, and then not quit in discouragement, but I might be discouraged because I need to do that, but then to go and find rest and refreshment in Him and figure out what He has for that time. And He's usually preparing you for something else or building back into something. Yeah. But you talked about the fact that if there's open opportunity, but we also know that sometimes God calls us to things and they're hard. So sometimes people read that as a not open opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about that too. Like, often we hear people say, you know, if God opens the doors, I'll walk through, but if He closes them, then that's His answer. But when is it a closed door, and when is it the army standing in front of you? And it's
because we know of missionaries, many missionaries who worked for years at what they knew God called them to, but didn't seem like open doors. But God was faithful, but not immediately, in the sense that we would call that open.
I don't remember the passage where Paul says, we read it at the prayer meeting. You were doing kids ministry. Never mind.
I was too.
You were too. Paul says, a wide door of ministry has been opened for me, and there are many opponents. Something along that line. Mm-hmm. I can't remember where he says that. In one of his letters, I always found that fascinating. Because we think of open doors easy. Paul does not. There's many adversaries, but there's a wide door open. So the gospel is going forth through conflict, through opposition. So, I mean, I think if we know God's calling us, we'll keep moving. So in Paul's case, there's enemies, but the gospel is also advancing simultaneously. So just because it's hard, he's also seeing fruit and he's obeying. But then even when the enemies come, he sees that as part of God's hand. He gets kicked out of the city, can't come back, moves on to the next one, preaches the gospel there, sends letters back to encourage the church, and sends his friends to go encourage the church. So, I mean, even in Acts, how did the church grow? The church grew because God brought persecution in order to scatter them, in order to get the gospel out of Jerusalem. Because if he didn't, they probably would have just sat in Jerusalem with the gospel, where the church was growing and it became safe. But it was through persecution that they all ran and brought the gospel with them, and persecution scattered them further and further. So even for Paul and the early apostles, hardship, they saw as God's tool as well. I mean, if they got kicked out of the city and there's a riot or there's opposition, they get thrown out, they go to the next town. And then when the problems follow, they go to the next town. And they saw it, but in some ways it was a closed door. In other ways, it's God moving them along to something new, a new incarnation of the same calling, which is to preach the gospel and plant churches. And so I think we just quit. Often we quit too early, just because something didn't go well, we give up. I think we should, if we know we're called to do the right things, we carry on. I mean, sometimes you're sharing the gospel. I mean, to get practical, you're sharing the gospel with a neighbor or friend, and you know God's called you to this, and they're not receiving it. You could say, oh, the door's closed, I'm going to quit. Or you could say, I know God's called me to it because it's biblical, it's right, and it's good. And I'm going to keep representing Jesus lovingly, graciously, faithfully, and because God's called me to, and there may be no fruit, and then it comes. I think of missionaries who go to the field, and we could, you know, think of stories and tell them, but who spend many, many years, decades with zero fruit, and then the harvest comes after their death or near the end, but it took maybe decades worth of work before some would say, well, they should have quit, but no, God was calling them to a long faithfulness that would have eventual fruit. And so I think too often we quit early and give up because it doesn't go perfect in the first year or the first conversation. There's opposition. And so, but we just got to keep being faithful and doing our bit and being faithful to the call of God in our lives. How about Isaiah, where God's call in his life was to preach the gospel until no one believes and the city lay in ruins? And I mean, Isaiah faithfully gave God's message, preached his message, represented God faithfully, and saw no fruit, no converts. but that was God's call in his life. So even then, sometimes just because it's hard, I mean, that maybe that's what God's calling you to do, is being faithful in hard things. So it's not that optimistic of a podcast.
But I think it comes back to then knowing when it's God's call. And I think we have to pay more attention to that than just what am I passionate about doing. And yeah. I think one of the things that I found stood out with the 4 points that you had made was the importance of the body around us. That how many times can we feel like God's calling us to something and we've got a passion for something, but we haven't sought the body around. And we are just working independently. And then when things get hard, we give up because it's hard. And yeah. We feel like it's a closed door.
Versus, yeah, I mean, I think submitting to others, you know, bringing it to people we trust who know us well, know the situation, who can also pray about it and affirm. So we know it's not just our selfishness or just something, but that there's a church around us who can say, we agree with you when you say that God has called you to this. We see that as well. And so we know it's not just you. I mean, and yet, because we do, Paul and I and others, we face situations where there's individuals like, God's calling me to this. And we're like, I doubt it because I don't, that's not biblical, or that's not, that actually might be sinful, or that does not seem wise. And we can't affirm that calling, but they're not necessarily looking for it. They're just telling us what God's doing in their lives independently all by themselves. And we're going, I'm not sure he's calling you to that. Maybe that's just what you want, because it makes you feel really important. You know, and even for us, we have to, you know, that's why biblically, you know, one pastor doesn't lead a church. There's a team of elders, and I submit my ideas to the elders and as a team and all these things. We need each other to help discern God's will and God's call on our lives, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, you look at, you know, Nehemiah didn't go build the wall by himself either.
No.
You even see, you know, in Nehemiah 4, as some held the sword and others built. There's a team.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we'll have questions after this podcast. So if you've been listening to this banter and you think we missed a question or you'd like Steve to elaborate more on something, then you should email us. Or if you hear next week's Sunday sermon and you have questions from that, you could email us and we could do your questions instead of our questions during the podcast. So you can email bside@tawassonalliance.org. That's .org, not .com. So bside@tawassonalliance.org. And again, we won't share who's asking the question, but you can send in your questions about the sermon, about the podcast, about something else that you're wrestling with. Please feel free to do that. You're probably not the only person who has that question, so feel free to send it in. And we hope that you tune in for some more, maybe witty banter or just banter and insight and special guests and things like that. So thanks for joining us for our first B-Side podcast. Have a good week.
Happy Thanksgiving.